The new Apple TV Plus series Central Park is an animated musical with a lot of interesting DNA. It shares creative and performing talent with Bob's Burgers, Frozen, and Hamilton, among other projects.
The show follows the manager of New York's Central Park. He tries to keep the park safe from trash overflows, a demanding public, and city politics. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today we're talking about Central Park on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Also with us from his home studio is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
So I was surprised. I have to say, you know, I think Apple TV Plus has a long way to go in figuring out how to raise the awareness of these shows. Because so here's some of the talent lineup, right? Created by Lauren Bouchard, who makes Bob's Burgers, along with Nora Smith, who works on Bob's Burgers, and Josh Gad, who is your favorite snowman Olaf. This cast is gigantically stacked, in my opinion. Leslie Odom Jr., David Diggs, Katherine Hahn, Kristen Bell, Titus Burgess, a really, really super stacked cast. Stanley Tucci, I forgot Stanley Tucci. How stacked is your cast when I forgot Stanley Tucci? Oh, some of the music's by Cyndi Lauper. Like, just really interesting talent all over the place. This was very much up my alley, as many musicals are. I find some are and some are not up the alleys of some of my co-panelists, so I want to get to you guys. Glenn, what did you think about Central Park?
This was fun. It's bright. It's colorful. The word I kept coming back to is cute. The character designs, as you mentioned, are pure Bob's Burgers character designs, such that if you were to walk in on this show, you might be thinking you're looking at a scene from Bob's Burgers that the Belchers aren't in. The comic voice is similar. The tone is directly in line with it. The only quibble I have is that on Bob's Burgers, even when a joke is kind of weirdly structured or it's too complicated, so it wouldn't land on any other show, but it lands on that show because that voice cast on Bob's Burgers is a murderer's row. And they can sell a joke with a line delivery. I mean, Dan Mintz as Tina could read the phone book and it would be a very funny phone book reading. But on Bob's Burgers, that cast is made up of stand-ups and sketch comedians. Central Park, we're dealing with actors, as you mentioned. Now, the comic actors, they're musical comedy actors, in fact, but it just feels different. It feels a little reined in to me. I mean, with the exception of Stanley Tucci as Bitsy, who is the show's villain, that's the other thing that's different about this show is that it's more serialized than Bob's Burgers certainly is. There's plots that kind of continue over the course of the season. I think maybe the actors are just coming at it from a different perspective. Maybe they're trying to build a character instead of selling the jokes. You got to do both. Bob's Burgers does, but I got to give it time, right? Because I didn't fall in love with Bob's Burgers immediately. It took a while. So I just think the show needs to loosen up a bit, or maybe I just need to loosen up. That's entirely possible.
All right, Stephen, I know that you are a big Bob's Burgers guy, so I was very curious about what you would think about this. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think Glenn made a really important point, which is that Bob's Burgers took a little while to get off the ground, and I don't actually think this has a hard time getting off the ground. I liked it immediately. It is vibrating on such a similar frequency to Bob's Burgers, while still feeling like a different show, while still feeling like a different cast, and while still structuring itself in different ways. There are lots of little musical vignettes in Bob's Burgers, but this has full-blown, lavishly orchestrated musical numbers. The budget on this show is very, very significant. This is not your streaming budget. This has orchestrations of rich musical numbers. And as you mentioned, the sensibility of this show to reflect its voice cast is Bob's Burgers meets Frozen meets Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And it can't possibly be the sum of those parts, but at the same time, it is a nice fusion of those sensibilities. I think Leslie Odom Jr. and David Diggs were getting a side of their toolkit that we haven't necessarily gotten before. And at the same time, so many of the things that I love about Bob's Burgers are on this show. You have a lot of similarities in the basic character structure. You have the dad at the center is this striver who kind of fetishizes hard work. And you have the kind of like the weird son whose heart is on his sleeve. You have a lot of these basic similarities and some of the same love of, you know, poop and fart and butt jokes. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you do have an enormous amount of heart. And I thought these songs worked great.
Yeah, I really liked it. I have to say I was somewhat surprised how much I liked it because I am not always a big animation person. But, you know, there was a really interesting point that was raised with me by our very smart producer, Jessica Reedy, who said that, No, we're taping this on June 5th. Mm-hmm. We are in the middle of a period of widespread public protest, widespread police violence, including in New York City, which has been one of the centers of that unrest. And I think because it is kind of a fantasy about kind of Central Park as this fantasy world, if it weren't animated, it might be really hard to watch right now because it is profoundly a fantasy. Mm-hmm. Now, at least in the episodes that we have watched, which are the first four, you don't see a lot of, you know, here is the friendly police officer. That's not really part of the fantasy of this. It's much more like public servants, like trash guys and the director of the park. It's possible that if it weren't animated, it would be harder to kind of resonate. But I think for me, this is certainly the way that you would want to see Central Park, as this place where all these different people can be and love the park. I enjoyed this a whole lot. I think it's really clever. I do like the fact that there's an ongoing plot about city politics. And the Stanley Tucci character is an old rich woman who wants to basically take over Central Park and use it as a business district. I love Stanley Tucci and David Diggs as two old white women, even though Bouchard has been asked about and has acknowledged that there is a sense in which when you take roles that are women and you give them to men, you have to sort of think through why you're doing that.
Right.
But I love those two performances. It's like, and we will not be the first people to point this out, but it's very Mr. Burns and Smithers, except if Smithers hated him more openly, like which I enjoy. I did really enjoy the music in this. And I think we may differ on this a little bit, but I think the songs, I very much enjoyed like listening. There's a song that takes place around that story about the control of the park. I was listening to it and I was thinking, this is either the best Hamilton pastiche I've ever heard, or it is something that was actually written by Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Ooh, feels just like high noon.
Ugh, we're sick of you tycoons.
You're all gonna die soon.
Aegis.
So... Well, here comes the typhoon.
The park is mine.
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 The park is all mine.
Mayor thinking that you own the town.
You're wearing dioramas like a crown.
You're killing tradition for your dividends.
You reek of entitlement. It's the depends.
And I looked at the credits at the end, and it's actually neither of those things, right? It's credited to Rafael Casal and to Utkarsh Ambudkar. So Rafael Casal is a longtime collaborator with David Diggs on a wide variety of projects. And then Utkarsh Ambudkar has been in Freestyle Love Supreme, which is the kind of musical collective that Lin-Manuel Miranda has worked on over time with lots of different people, including a bunch of people who have been associated with Hamilton. So it's kind of the DNA is all mixed up with the Hamilton DNA. I loved it. I thought that song was really, really cool.
I'm going to push back just a bit because I think they're all book numbers. They're all advancing the plot. They're all retro pastiches, which are never going to be breakaway pop hits. I didn't find them memorable. Now, I've only seen the show through once, so, you know, I think for them to get their hooks in me, I probably need to see them again. But
or hear the music more. The cast album's on Spotify, by the way.
That's true. I could do that.
I don't know that they're indelible. I've only heard them for the first time this week, and I don't know that I'm walking around singing them. But I think we're maybe comparing these to when you say pop hits, it's like, okay, not necessarily pop hits, but do I think that they are fun musical theater pieces? I definitely do.
Yeah, I mean, I think instead of necessarily getting like pop hits, that's really not the bar that this show is trying to clear. What they have is enormous amounts of vibrancy and energy. And when you start saying like, which ones do you remember? Like, I can pretty quickly start rattling off. Like, I thought the Mama's Got This one was fun. I thought the Rats one was silly. My reaction when I was like, oh, which songs do I remember? Is like, well, I'm going to rewatch this show several times. And the songs are going to get their hooks in me more from watching the show several times. And the fact that my immediate response was, well, I'm going to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Is a pretty good indication that this show is doing something that I'm going to want to keep coming back to. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about the casting of Kristen Bell as Molly?
It's interesting, right? Because you have this family where the mother is white and she's played by Catherine Hahn. The father is black and he's played by Leslie Odom Jr. The kids are both biracial and they are played by Titus Burgess and Kristen Bell. And Bouchard has talked about this casting in a couple of different interviews. I think it's worth like thinking through, is that the right thing to do? There is something that I like about the idea of Kristen Bell and Titus Burgess playing siblings. I don't know. I have a lot of complicated feelings about that, because obviously that's a little different from the decision to cast, you know, for example, Daveed Diggs as an older white woman. I have, I guess, kind of mixed feelings about it. I think Belle is good in it. I think this is kind of quintessential her. It definitely is a little bit unsettled. Glenn, what do you think?
I think sometimes, of all the characters, that's the flattest one to me.
Yeah.
She's boy crazy. That's kind of her thing. And Tina on Bob's Burgers, keep comparing, shouldn't compare, but can't help it. Tina on Bob's Burgers is boy crazy, but that is only one layer of her weirdness. She's a very developed character. And here, again, four episodes in, it's tough to say, but maybe she'll get some more layers.
Well, and I will say the other thing about this character is that she draws a superhero comic in which she plays a superhero called Fistapuffs, which I think is a great name for a superhero. But again, the whole thing of Fistapuffs is that her hair has puffs, right? Mm-hmm. Kristen Bell's hair doesn't have puffs. It's uncomfortable. It's complicated because obviously, yes, you know, I like the idea of them as siblings, but I get what you're saying. What are you thinking, Stephen?
Yeah, I definitely felt a little bit uneasy with that casting. I think the show is clearly doing a lot of work to kind of upend a lot of traditional casting decisions, and that's one of the decisions that they made along the way. I will say, I love the casting of Titus Burgess and the use of Titus Burgess, who is so... Titus Burgess is so typically cast. You know him from The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. You know, he does a lot of, like, big, loud acting. And in this, he gets to be subtler and weirder. He's kind of playing on this show's equivalent of Eugene Merman on Bob's Burgers, but they let him be kind of softer and a little bit more reflective. And it's just a side of Titus Burgess that I haven't always gotten a chance to see. And I think he's marvelous in it.
Maybe that's what I was reacting to when I said the show felt reined in to me. Titus Burgess especially feels like he's creating a real character out of that kid. You know, he's actually acting as opposed to delivering jokes. I mean, he's still funny.
But he's still weird. I like the fact that, like Stephen is saying, he's kind of deadpan weird. And I will say, I did like the jokes. I laughed at this show quite a bit. Again, is it the funniest show I've ever seen? Probably not. Did I really enjoy it? Absolutely. I totally, absolutely did. Although I will, here is my complaint. Here is my complaint about the show that I'm saying I very much enjoyed. I understand Josh Gad is a co-creator of this show. I understand Josh Gad is famous, but he plays essentially an unnecessary narrator in this show. Mm-hmm. You might have needed some narration or something. I mean, maybe you need some kind of framing because they are constantly kind of skipping around and explaining the context of Central Park and how it works. But every single time that I heard that character start talking, my reaction was kick rocks, Olaf. Every single time.
Oh, come on.
Kick rocks, Olaf. Like, and I like Olaf. There's something about him in this that I just kept being like, kick rocks, Olaf.
Aww. Troubadours do not work. We have learned this. Did Gilmore Girls teach us nothing? Gilmore Girls, as a narrative device, do not work.
Oh, come on. Well, first of all, we can have a whole argument about that. I think Jonathan Richman and There's Something About Mary is very funny. I also like Frozen 2 better than you guys do. I did not once say kick rocks, Olaf, watching this show.
That's going to be the one thing people take away from this.
That's right.
What was Pop Culture Happy Hour's take on Central Park? Kick rocks, Olaf. That's going to be it. All right. We want to know what you think about Central Park. Again, this is a show that exists on Apple TV Plus, which perhaps you automatically have because of what devices you own. You'll just have to investigate. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. When we come back, it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy? So stick around.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Best Fiends. Best Fiends is the 5-star rated puzzle game with thousands of fun levels to play and tons of cute characters to collect. New levels are released each week and the game updates monthly, so there is always a new challenge to master. Engage your brain by playing through these fun and challenging puzzles anywhere and anytime. No internet required. Download on the Apple App Store or Google Play for free. That's Friends without the R. Best Fiends.
This message comes from NPR sponsor StoryPoint Wines, maker of StoryPoint, a new wine brand who believes that wine and storytelling are the perfect pair. Much like a good podcast, StoryPoint builds layers of interest into their wine to create a bold, velvety taste profile in every bottle. Discover why StoryPoint received Wine Enthusiast's Best Buy Award. Visit storypointwines.com/happyhour to purchase. As a special offer to NPR listeners, shipping is included in your online order.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment, What's Making Us Happy This Week. Steven, what's making you happy this week?
Well, my family has been looking for new things to binge as we sit together in quarantine, and we found the absolute perfect thing, which is Disney Plus. We all gathered around the old Disney Plus machine and just started scrolling through this giant cavernous menu, and we've taken to taking turns picking from the menu. And so, like, it was my night recently, and I picked Onward, the sadly suddenly forgotten Pixar movie, which I think is great, and we watched it as a family. Katie picked Brave, one of her favorite Pixar movies. My daughter picked this corny Disney musical teen beach movie from 2013, and we all sat and watched it and kind of goofed along with it. We're looking ahead to watching Herbie movies together. We're looking ahead to watching Pixar movies we haven't spent as much time with. It has been a really lovely break from the world and an opportunity for us to sit as a family and share our favorite, surprisingly wholesome programming together. So if you haven't really gotten a chance to dig into Disney Plus, I highly recommend it. That's just binging and scrolling through Disney Plus.
Binging and scrolling, the Stephen Thompson story. Thank you very much, buddy. I appreciate it. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Return of the Obra Dinn, O-B-R-A. Next word, D-I-N-N. It's a game I played on the Switch, but it's available on a lot of different platforms. In it, you play an insurance investigator.
Dun, dun, dun.
Thousands of pulses just quickened across the nation. It's 1807. You are investigating a trading ship that went missing and has now returned to England without its crew or its passengers or its cargo. And your job is to determine what happened to all 60 members of the crew and the passengers using only the ship's manifest, which gives you name, rank, and country of origin, a handful of photos, and of course, it's a game, a magic stopwatch that allows you to see and to investigate the precise moment that a person on the ship died. And you see that moment frozen in time. And the cool thing is you can kind of walk around the ship while that's frozen and kind of see what else is going on. So you can construct a chronology of events. It's also got a great visual style. It's black and white, almost stipple illustrations. So it's kind of like walking through the Wall Street Journal. That's a Return of the Obra Dinn.
Thank you, Glenn. That sounds really fun, and it fits perfectly with my side cosplay career where I play an actuary. So every now and then, along comes the song we need, the song we can't forget, the song that sticks in our minds as a nation. Here it is.
Black neighborhoods are over-policed, so of course they have higher rates of crime. And white perpetrators are undercharged, so of course they have lower rates of crime. And all of those stupid stats you keep using are operating off a small sample size. So shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up.
Stephen and I were both bopping along to that.
I know this well.
Katie and I have been singing this to each other all week long.
It's one of those things. I was telling somebody yesterday, every time a silence falls upon me this week, that is what I start singing to myself. So that little ditty about crime rates and crime statistics, I first saw via Instagram. The singer there goes by wordy.talk, W-O-R-D-Y.talk on Instagram. And the accompaniment, the three-part accompaniment, comes from one alex.on.keys, K-E-Y-S, also on Instagram. You know, it is a difficult moment to find anything light and entertaining, and I don't know that you would think the subject matter here is light and entertaining, but this is one of the catchiest ditties of 2020 of any kind, in my opinion. Alex has also posted the sheet music, which makes sense because everyone wants to learn the little harmonies. And obviously this is, you could spend 6-hour-long podcast episodes on this, but I am fascinated by the intersection of social media and activism right now. And one of the things I think is so interesting is that you put something like this into the world and it's somehow both really fun and really serious. Yeah. And a lot of the other wordy talk videos are about linguistics and words and choices. It's really, really good content. And it's also, as I said, this is maybe the catchiest song of 2020. So that is what is making me happy this week is the extraordinary creativity and thoughtfulness that goes into TikTok content, Instagram content, Thank you to Wordy Talk and to Alex on Keys for the song that is resonating in my head all week. That's what's making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon. Our producer, Jessica Reedy, is at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer, Mike Katziff, is at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you're bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We'll see you all right back here next week.
You may have noticed something at all these protests over police violence. There are a lot more white people there than you'd expect. But how long will that last?
This awakening among white American voters, how far are they really willing to go beyond dethroning Trump?
Adam Serwer on race and lessons from history. Listen and subscribe to It's Been a Minute from NPR.